Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome. If you've ever been abandoned by a loved one, you know how painful it can be and how hard it can be to recover. My first guest is an expert in helping people recover from abandonment, and she'll also shine a light on the many ways in which we abandon ourselves, something I'd never really thought about until I came across her work. I'll introduce her in just a moment. In the second half of today's show, we'll hear Booklist's Queen of Romantic Suspense. She's a New York Times and USA Today best-selling author. Linda Howard is her name. She's published more than 40 books with Simon & Schuster and HarperCollins, and we'll be talking to her today about her 21-year journey into becoming a published writer. It took her 21 years before she sent something out to a publisher. But as you can see, she's doing very well now. Well, first, I'm pleased to welcome Susan Anderson to the show. She's actually a returning guest. We talked with her about Taming Your Outer Child, which was a great book, something that gave me several insights into situations. And so I'm pleased to have her back today to talk about the Abandonment Recovery Workbook. She's also written The Journey from Abandonment to Healing. She's the founder of the Outer Child and Abandonment Recovery Movements and has devoted the past 30 years of clinical experience and research to helping people resolve abandonment and overcome self-sabotage. And her website is abandonment.net, and she's here today to talk to us about the Abandonment Recovery Workbook. Susan Anderson, welcome.
Oh, I'm happy to be here, Vicki.
And I told you before the break, before we started, and I genuinely mean this, I really love your work. You talked about the outer child. We talked about that last time, and that was very eye-opening. And now we're going to talk about abandonment. But I wonder if you just share with our listeners, and we did talk about this at length last time, so if we could just share for those who don't know just a little bit about why you became so interested in work around abandonment.
Yes, well, I had specialized in the issue of abandonment, as in, you know, the feelings of abandonment that people have that sort of echo through their lives and make them insecure, et cetera, or abandonment as in going through a heartbreak. That had been my specialty as a psychotherapist. And the love of my life, my 18-year marital partner, just left me out of the blue for another woman, but it was very sudden and extremely shocking to everyone who knew us. We were all in shock, and I was in so much pain that it was beyond belief. And my tools that I'd been using with my clients proved to be insufficient to really help me in the way that I needed help. So I had to experience it myself to discover that much greater tools were needed, and it sent me on kind of a research mission through the annals of neuroscience and everything else to look for really substantial tools that work to help a person benefit from going through an abandonment rather than be diminished by it.
Right, because it can be extremely devastating. I think probably most of us can relate to some level, some of us more, you know, more than others. But, you know, it doesn't matter if it's a parent or a lover or a spouse, that loss is very, very significant.
Yes, and children experience it. And, of course, children are very resilient, and a lot of their feelings don't show on the outside. But many of us carry wounds left over from childhood losses, abandonments, disconnections. Children are very sensitive to all of those things.
Right.
Divorce and, you know, many different scenarios. Having a parent who's an alcoholic, children are very sensitive and do get marred, scarred even, by those experiences. So many people who suffer from abandonment aren't going through a breakup, per se, but they're struggling with the insecurity and the hyperreactivity or the isolation that comes from having unresolved abandonment wounds from the past.
Right. And it's interesting, as I talk to many people, you know, over the years and experiences I've had myself too, you think you may have moved on from certain things, and then something totally unrelated can kind of bring those feelings back up.
Yes. Because you do move on. Of course, life goes on. We put one foot in front of the other, and we do. We find a replacement, or we continue going and get distracted. But if something happens that triggers those feelings, we suddenly discover that the wound is still there. You know, the fear of abandonment is primal. It's everyone's greatest fear, but that doesn't mean we're always in touch with it.
Right.
But when something happens that may trigger that fear, we're aware of the fact that we are human beings, we are vulnerable, and we have fear of being left behind and just having to spend the rest of our lives isolated and alone.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about this particular book today. This is a new edition. It's a revised edition, the Abandonment Recovery Workbook, Guidance Through the 5 Stages of Healing from Abandonment, Heartbreak, and Loss. And you begin by saying this book is meant to be held when you need it and put away when you must. It can lie sleeping on your shelf and then be embraced quickly as you feel necessary. Tell us a little bit about the book and what makes this different from anything else out there.
Well, many people requested that I write this book, and because they wanted step-by-step help. But to start a program that begins with so many steps can be daunting. So people who use the workbook use it as they feel, as the spirit moves them, as the situation arrives. So it's a book that's designed to be dense and helpful in every possible way, but it doesn't have to be done all at once. A person can take her time and go through the different exercises and there are questionnaires and check-off lists and all kinds of things, and begin to peel back the layers. And it can take place over a period of time.
Yeah.
Or they can just turn to any page and get inspired by many of the truths that are mentioned throughout the book.
Right, because you talk about 5 stages of abandonment. You mentioned in the beginning of our conversation that even though you had been practicing this with patients for many years, when you went through it personally, you realized there was nothing significant out there. So you talk about the 5 stages of abandonment. Just share those with us, if you would.
Well, they spell SWIRL, shattering, withdrawal, internalizing, rage, and lifting, SWIRL, which is the process of how you go through them. You're swirling through them. They happen within a minute, within an hour, within a week. They're sort of cycles within cycles. Shattering is when you feel the rug being pulled out from underneath you. It could either be a relationship like mine where you're suddenly heartbroken, or it could be a connection you were hoping to make that doesn't pan out. But either way, it feels as if somebody's pulling the rug out from underneath you, and you go right back to where you were before. It could be the moment you're afraid that your job is in jeopardy and you might be fired. It could be when a friend doesn't invite you to a party. You feel the rug pulled out from underneath you. And then in withdrawal is when you really yearn for that relationship, for that person, for that love, for that connection, for that security. You're yearning for it. As if you were yearning for, as if you were a drug addict yearning for heroin, let's say, and you're yearning for a love fix, but you can't get one. You're yearning to make that connection, but it's not available, so you're in this state of withdrawal. And then internalizing is when you say, it must be because I'm not enough, I'm not good enough, I'm not beautiful enough, I'm not successful enough, I'm not tall enough, I'm not thin enough, I'm not personable enough, I'm not attractive enough. You feel that you're not enough, and you beat yourself up, and you take the feelings of rejection out on yourself. People, for instance, out there, millions of them, who don't have relationships, and they desperately want one, but they can't find one, beat themselves up unmercifully. What am I doing wrong? What's wrong with me? Why do other people have relationships? the internalizing process is very scarring. It leaves damages unless you know how to handle it, unless you do the right kind of steps with the feelings that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And then you feel rage because you get angry and frustrated at the situation. You get so angry, your energy goes outward into the world because you're trying so hard to have love and connection, and the world is turning against you. The abandoner has left you, or all the other people you've tried to connect with aren't there for you. And there's this rage, this frustration. And that's when the energy sort of gets sent back out into the world. Instead of just attacking you, it's kind of going back out and being angry at the situation. And then you have lifting, where you lift above the abandonment. You lift out of the abandonment, but you don't lift out all at first all at once. You lift out during intervals. A friend makes you laugh. Flowers delight you. A breeze is delicious when on a hot day. Suddenly you realize you're being distracted by life and by people, but you might go back into the pain. It's just that you're beginning to feel intervals of peace. And the lifting phase is terribly important because when you lift, you need to take your feelings with you. Because if you don't, you can become callous and numb, and you can develop a pattern where you are only attracted to the unavailable.
That's not a good thing.
Yeah. Now, it's a very common phenomenon.
Now, the five stages of abandonment, obviously, you call it swirl, which is a great name because you swirl backwards and forwards, I would think, between each stage sometimes.
Yes. You can go right. You sort of swirl through them, and there are cycles within cycles, so it feels as if you're going back and forth.
Right.
The direction of the energy just keeps you going and going and going through these stages.
Right. Well, I have some more questions around that, but let's take a break so we can dive into that. I also want to talk about the many, many, many ways that we abandon ourselves. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Susan Anderson, psychotherapist Susan Anderson. Her book is called The Abandonment Recovery Workbook. We will be right back.
Don't you know sometimes these things may don't work out? Best to walk away while your love burns out. Don't you feel sometimes?
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Need help getting started with self-help? You came to the right place. Alternative Talk, 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. Well, if you've ever been lovesick, if you've been abandoned, you know how painful it is and how difficult it can be to recover from that and to ever trust anybody again. Well, we have an expert here, Susan Anderson. She's a psychotherapist. She's dedicated 30 years of her life to this kind of work. We're talking today about the Abandonment Recovery Workbook, Guidance Through the Five Stages of Healing from Abandonment, Heartbreak, and Loss. And Susan just shared the five stages of abandonment with us. And I just have a couple of questions. If we find ourselves in this situation, what are the first two things you'd recommend we do? Obviously, it's going to be a little different for everyone, Susan. But what are the top two things you would recommend people take stock of?
First of all, to know that there is hope, but it takes work. If you sort of follow the natural course of things, you will just feel devastated and begin to beat yourself up. And then you will pick yourself up slowly and find substitutes and possibly get into a rebound relationship. There are all kinds of things that people tend to do after going through a devastating situation. But for those people who are going through abandonment or who are suffering from childhood wounds from abandonment and have difficulty getting into a relationship or have difficulty managing their feelings in a relationship, for those people, there is hope. There is a program that involves work that you have to actually do, but the doing changes your life. So that's the first thing to know. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing to know is that it's going to involve creating a new relationship with yourself. So you need to really take stock of your relationship, the one that you now have with yourself, and it will be a little bit affected, if not greatly affected, by feeling rejected or betrayed or struggling to find a relationship. Your relationship with yourself is hurt by that, and you are going to develop a new relationship with yourself where you take exquisite emotional care of yourself and inculcate self-love, because the root cause of most of the problems in adult life is self-abandonment. Self-abandonment is what happens when you start to beat yourself up or inculcate self-doubt. And so you abandon yourself and you start making other people more important and you have all kinds of other defense mechanisms. So the thing that we have to do is to reverse self-abandonment, which involves taking stock of your relationship with yourself and starting almost from scratch to develop a new relationship, a stronger, healthier relationship with yourself.
Mm. And so let's look at some of the ways that we do abandon ourselves. Might be that we don't take the time to eat properly. We're putting everybody else's needs first. Tell us a little bit more about that.
I call that the outer child. The ways that we abandon ourselves gets us into all kinds of outer child behaviors, and they're based on immediate gratification. So, we all have very important long-term hopes and dreams to love, to be loved, to have a long-term commitment, and to feel connected to people, et cetera, to have a career. It's all these wonderful things, but they involve taking actions, taking steps, and doing it. The enemy of that is immediate gratification, where let's say we're on a diet, so we're, instead of sticking to the diet, which is difficult work, we eat the closest thing that's delicious, so we have an ice cream cone. So the immediate gratification is when we take a nap instead of clean out the garage, watch the game instead of go to the gym, eat the cake instead of stick to the diet, and chase after the unavailable guy or woman when we're looking for a long-term relationship. The immediate gratification is the thing that is a form of self-abandonment, because what we're doing is we're saying, in essence, you're not important enough to delay gratification.
Mm-hmm.
You're not important enough to follow this goal, to reach that dream. So let's just get the cheap thrill over with now. Let's grab for the cake. Let's take the nap. Let's, you know, watch the TV. And let's spend the money we don't have, or whatever the behavior is. Let's avoid. Let's procrastinate. Avoidance is a very big behavior. But let's grab for what feels good now, instead of going through all the hard work of getting you the dreams, that, you know, achieving your long-range goals. So that's self-abandonment, and the way we work our way out of going through abandonment, whether it's from childhood or current loss, is we begin to develop that relationship, and we make a commitment to ourselves, and step by step, little baby steps, we begin to realize our goals, including the goal for love.
Yes. And as we start accomplishing, even if it's a tiny little goal, as we start accomplishing goals, that's when we start to feel better about ourselves and build our confidence out in the world again, isn't it?
It really is, because if there were only a magic pill to have higher self-esteem,
yes,
or some very simple, easy program, just say, I love you in the mirror 20 times a day, we'd all do that. But really, we have to earn our self-love. But we can. There are powerful tools that help us do that,
mm-hmm,
that really facilitate that, because it's one of those easier said than done things. So we need an elbow grease way of actually facilitating it.
Right. A lot of times we're told to follow our gut. Listen to your gut. Listen to your instinct. You say there are times when that's probably not the best idea when you're going through this process.
Well, you know, when you've had an abandonment history, and by that I mean such a wide variety of things. It could stem from any kind of family system that you can imagine and any kind of situation. But if you have an abandonment history, your tendency might be to follow, if your gut is telling you to go after the woman who's cheating, you know, who's a cheater, or your gut might be attracted to the wrong person. Your gut might say, you know what, let's not make that phone call to look for that better job. Let's put that off till tomorrow when you're in better form. Your gut might have you grab for the immediate gratification or do something that's part of a pattern. So it's just very hard to listen to your gut, because your gut speaks with a forked tongue. So you might have one gut that says, wait a minute, I think this is the same type of person as before. And the other gut is saying, no, go for it, go for it. You know, you're attracted, it's good, go for it.
Right.
So
right.
It's just not as reliable for people with abandonment histories. And that really includes just millions and millions of us.
Mm-hmm.
The gut is not as reliable as we would like.
A lot of people, if we talk about relationships, abandonment in relationships, jump from relationship to relationship because they're afraid of being alone. I know a few people like this myself. They just would rather be with, you know, the pits than be alone. You talk in the book about how the ability to be alone affects adult relationships. Tell us a little about that.
The ability to be alone is developed if you're secure enough when you're a child. A child who doesn't have enough security will have a hard time developing the ability to be alone. It really, it's in order to be happy to be all by yourself and coloring in your coloring book and mommy's not even in the room, you have to be very secure mommy's around somewhere. So those of us, many of us, who just didn't have that opportunity because we just weren't secure enough. And let's not blame it on the parents. It could just be the way we're built. It could be our temperament that we're just not secure enough. Have a hard time feeling comfortable when we're alone because we worry. Am I always going to be alone? Or we just don't feel comfortable. We need the reassurance of other people. We need the connection of other people. We need to be in a relationship. We need. So the idea is that the being alone is actually a very positive, constructive state, but
right,
it is something that we have to cultivate because we might not have developed it naturally. But learning how to be comfortable when being alone allows us to hang in long enough to be able to withstand the vulnerability of a relationship when we get into one.
Mm. Oftentimes you say that people who've abandoned us become very powerful figures in our psyche. Why is that? Why do they get their little claws in there so strongly?
Yes, well, there's many answers to that question. They all boil down to the same thing. I call it traumatic bond, and it's actually mediated by the body's own opioids, the substances that we produce that are addictive, and we become, like the endorphins we talk about, we become addicted to exercise through endorphins. But we become addicted to someone who produces pain. So when someone abandons us, that person has caused pain from the abandonment. And the brain somehow makes a link to that person as a very powerful, important figure. The emotional brain is saying, this person can cause great damage. This is an important person. This person is to be avoided. And there's this heightened reaction to this person. If we see them all of a sudden bump into them, it could ruin our whole day just seeing this person because of the way our brain has reacted to this, the pain that this person caused. And in a sense, we have almost a traumatic bond to that person. And people, friends will say, just let go, you know, just don't think about her. She's not worth it. Or he didn't treat you properly. Forget about him. But the truth is that the more somebody hurt us, the harder it is to let go. And our friends may not recognize it when we're going through it, but we're in a real struggle to overcome a kind of addiction.
Well, I know a lot of work went into this workbook to help people recover from this, Susan. Great book. I love your work. Final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
Well, the fact that it's a workbook, it's step-by-step, baby steps. It makes it as easy as possible, just flowing along with it at one's own pace, because it is a daunting task, but it's doable. And especially if you just kind of follow along in a program, it all turns out okay.
Right. And for those who don't like support groups per se, you know, where there are other people involved, this is a great way to go.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Well, I thank you for being with us today and look forward to talking to you again.
Well, thank you, Vicki. I enjoyed it.
I guess psychotherapist Susan Anderson, you can find out more about Susan and the great work that she's doing at abandonment.net, and that leads out to another site, the Outer Child site as well. But the book we talked about today is The Abandonment Recovery Workbook, Guidance Through the 5 Stages of Healing from Abandonment, Heartbreak, and Loss. Stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you, at the exact level you need, whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Coming this month on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Good news, in the race to save pandas from extinction, China is making great strides. But with only 1,600 in the wild, the race is still on. National Geographic photographer Emil Bitterly joins us to share fun facts and experiences from China's three panda maternity wards. You'll hear how they get pandas in the mood to procreate, what might surprise us about baby pandas, and more about the effort China is pouring into repopulating this 8 million year old species back into the wild. Tune in Mondays at noon Pacific time right here on Alternative Talk 1150.
When I was little, I didn't talk for a long time. I was sensitive to lights and sounds, so I'd build secret hiding places where they couldn't get in. Sometimes I'd do the same things over and over, until one day I found out I had autism. My family got me help. Slowly, I learned how to live with it better.
Early intervention can make a lifetime of difference. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
Exploring new territory every day. This is Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Eric's making me laugh here. So we just talk about abandonment recovery, which is a very difficult situation. And I was laughing because he found this great piece of music talking about trouble. And my next guest, her new book is called Troublemaker. We're talking, of course, of Linda Howard. She's the award-winning author of many New York Times bestsellers, including Up Close and Dangerous, Drop Dead Gorgeous, Kiss Me While I Sleep, and many others. And she's joining us today to talk about her new book, as I said, Troublemaker. Linda Howard, welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me, Vicki.
It's my pleasure. And you're joining us from Alabama, right?
That's right.
All right.
So, I've lived here my entire life.
Yeah. I read that you've been there all of your life, and I want to just since it's the first time you're joining us today, just share a little of your background with our listeners. And I read that you started writing at 9 years old.
Yes, I did.
And so what were you writing at 9 years old?
Well, even at nine, I was writing kind of a little adventure thing. I started out with a short story and made the mistake of telling my fourth grade teacher that I had done that, and she made me read it aloud to the class, and I found out I absolutely detest reading aloud. So I never told them again. But after the one short story, then my next venture was I wrote a full-length book.
Wow.
By hand.
Wow. So you lived in Alabama. You've lived there all of your life, as we said, in Alabama. You worked at a trucking company, I read, where you met your husband.
That's right.
And you wrote for like 20, 21 years before you decided to get published.
Well, I practiced for 20 years.
There you go. But you know what? This is what I always say. When we hear of overnight successes, they've all been practicing for 20 years.
I wrote for the sheer enjoyment of telling a story. I wrote for myself. And one day I got up getting ready for work, and it was like someone had flipped the switch. And I thought, it's time to see if I'm good enough.
And so how did you go about finding an agent and a publisher and all that?
Well, I went to the library and did research. I went to the bookstore. And the kind of books that I like to read, I made note of who the publisher was, and then I looked up those publishers to see what their submitting guidelines were, and then I wrote the book I wanted to write and sent it in.
Yeah. So you're,
There you go.
So you're a charter member of the Romance Writers of America. You were Region 3 director fairly recently. What advantage do you find, if any, being an author of being a member of an association like that?
Well,
that's actually
one
of the biggest groups in America, right? The romance.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It's around 10,000 members, so it's a huge writers organization. And one of the things about being a writer is you spend so much time alone and carrying on a conversation with just the ordinary person, they're not going to understand if you are having difficulty in figuring out how to get rid of a body.
Right.
Well, and, you know, or some way to kill someone that you can't detect.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot carry on those conversations in a restaurant. So...
you could. It would make for great eavesdropping.
Oh, yeah. And you might get arrested. But a writer's organization, you get to talk to people who think the same way you do.
Yeah. And so I hear now that your husband is now a professional bass tournament fisherman, and you travel with him writing on your laptop.
Well, he was. He has since retired.
Okay.
He still fishes, but it's more... like within the Southeast, we aren't traveling all over the United States now.
Mm-hmm. So you've been dubbed the Queen of Romantic Suspense by Booklist. Tell us what that means. What does romantic suspense mean? Because they've kind of broke it out into so many different genres now.
Oh, yeah. Romantic suspense is you still, the relationship is at the heart of the story. But it forms within the circumstances of a suspenseful or adventurous plot that is going on around them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you still have two people falling in love, but at the same time they're dodging bullets and parachuting out planes.
Well, they are in this book. They are in Troublemaker. So let's talk a little bit about Troublemaker. It's a fast-paced novel. Your protagonist is Morgan Yancey. Your other is Isabeau Beaumarin. Tell us about Morgan Yancey, who he is and what he does.
He's a black ops operative who is ambushed, and the agency... files have been hacked. They don't know who. And because they don't know who, they don't know why he was ambushed and nearly killed. He has to have a safe place to recuperate. So he is sent to his boss's ex-stepsister. And she happens to be the chief of police of a small West Virginia town.
And so they come across each other how?
He is sent to her house to recuperate.
And then sparks start flying in more ways than one.
Sparks eventually start flying. I mean, he was almost killed. He's barely in a good enough shape to walk in the door.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly he stays collapsed.
And so sometimes authors base their characters on people they know or a little bit of themselves. Are either of these based on people you know?
No, I've never based a character on anyone I know.
And so how do you start developing a character then for you? Let's talk about Morgan Yancey, the black ops guy who's the team leader in a paramilitary group. So let's talk about him. How did you start... developing his character?
It is almost like meeting someone for the first time. And the first time you meet them, all you know about them really is what they look like. And then each time you meet them, you find out a little more about them. And it's a lot like that.
Mm-hmm. So
I am not someone who can sit down and plot a book. There are people called plotters, and there are people called pantsers, and I am a pantser, meaning I write by the seat of my pants.
I was going to say it sounds more organic the way you were describing.
Very organic.
Very organic. You sit down, but you have to start somewhere. So tell us where you start.
Well, with this, it starts. Each book is different, and with this book, it actually started with Bo's house. I knew she lived in a converted barn, and I knew it was in West Virginia. And that's all I knew. And then she developed from a woman who lived in a barn. And I don't know.
She developed into.
Describe it.
She developed into a part-time police chief. Well, yes.
Yeah.
If it's that organic, it's just coming to you. Who knows how it comes to you? But we've all been in these situations, I think, where things just come to us. And you're right. I talk with a lot of fiction writers, and some outline every last detail from, you know, food that people like and dislike, and clothes that they wear, and colors that they like, and music they listen to. One of my friends does that. She sets all that up before she starts. And then others, it comes much more organically.
If I did that, there is something in me that would consider the story told.
Mm-hmm.
And I would completely lose interest and move off.
Mm. Yeah.
So for me, the joy of writing is the joy of discovery.
Right. And so tell us then, what does discipline mean to you as a writer?
Not giving up.
Because a huge part of writing is rewriting.
Oh, yeah. I love rewriting.
And so...
I love rewriting.
Yeah. And so on average, I mean, do you do a lot of rewrites before you send off to your publisher? How does that process go for you?
I really only do one complete version. But when I write like a sewing machine. I'm going back and forth and polishing and rewriting as I go. And then when I hit print on a chapter, I almost never have to go back into that chapter.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. I wish it worked like that for me. I think I'm in that. I'm not comparing myself with Hemingway by any means here, but because I don't write fiction for one thing. But you know, I'm in the category where the polishing comes once the original's been written.
You know, everyone has their own way of doing it. Mm. There is no one correct way. One of my best friends just flies through the first version, and she's just hitting the rough parts, and then she goes back to the very beginning and start fleshing out and polishing.
Right.
And if I did that, I would consider the story told.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Different strokes for different folks.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to take a very quick break. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Linda Howard. She has had more than 40 successful books on the market, and her latest is called Troublemaker. We will be right back.
If you're looking for trouble, you came to the right place. If you're looking for trouble, just look right in my face. I was born standing up and talking back. My daddy was a green-eyed mountain jack.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
Mm-hmm. This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to NewPro Products, we cover the world of animals. This Sunday, August 28th, it's an encore presentation. Morley Ventreco from the Ananda Institute of Living Yoga and the director of the Ananda Yoga Teaching Training in the studio, one of the most knowledgeable and inspiring speakers I've ever heard. History of Yoga, India, and Hatha Yoga 101. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
Talk radio with a purpose. Alternative Talk 1150.
We're talking travel. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. My guest is Linda Howard, and her book is Troublemaker. Eric's having great fun with the music on this one. And Linda's published more than 40 books with various major publishers. And she's, as we talked in the beginning, she didn't start writing. Oh, she's written all of her life, but she didn't get published for 20-some years because she just wrote for herself. And I'm wondering what we talked a little about this, but what was it that triggered in your mind, Linda, that now I'm ready or now I want to get published?
There's really no way to tell, other than I was such a heavy reader, and I would read what was out there in the market, and I would read what I had written. And I thought, okay, this is comparable. So let's see.
Right.
So I mailed my manuscript off and promptly lost 20 pounds because I couldn't eat for 6 weeks.
There you go. That's a good diet tip.
Oh, my God. It was like putting your child in the mail.
Well, it's different now with all our digital processes.
Oh, but, now you yeah. press a button and it's gone. There you go.
There you go. So, who would you say has been your biggest creative influence? I think we're all influenced, you know, get inspired by certain people, certain things, certain activities. What inspires you?
People in general, just ordinary people. I think of D-Day in 1944 and the men landing on the beaches of Normandy were ordinary people who accomplished extraordinary things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just people. It's ordinary people and what they do in extraordinary circumstances.
Yeah.
As far as writers, I have read so heavily all of my life, it would be hard to pick out. There are a lot of writers I admire. I mean, I adore Dick Francis's work. But, you know, you have to develop your own style and your own way of looking at it.
Right, right.
And have faith in developing that rather than thinking have to be like someone else.
Well, there's the key, I think, to people who are very successful is that they forget all that at the end of the day and listen to their own voice. They develop their own voice. And I know that the really successful people that I've spoken with over the many years we've been doing this, and as a writer, I've interviewed many people too. But the thing that I hear consistently is write for yourself. And that's what you've practiced for many, many years.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, don't write for the market. Don't write for your agent or your publisher or what you think people want. write for yourself?
No, because if you aren't writing the book that you love, you're not going to give it everything that's in
you. Yeah.
And I still, to this day, I am writing for myself. I am trying to tell the story that's in my head and get it on the paper. And I've never yet done it.
Mm-hmm.
Something always changes.
Right.
So I keep trying.
Well, with over 40 books on the market over the years, what do you know now that you'd wish you'd known when you first started publishing?
I wish I had known how hard it would be, that it never gets any easier.
True.
Yeah, I don't know that I would have changed anything, but I would have been better prepared.
Yeah, you would have set up your expectations better.
I would have considerably lowered my expectations of, oh, this is going to get easy, because it does not.
What do you find the hardest about it?
Actually, finding enough time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I need 48 hours in each day just to have enough time to write and enough time to handle life and enough time to try all the new things I want to try.
Right. Well, you're finding it somewhere. So what's your secret? You have 40 books you've written. That's nothing to sneeze at.
Well, no, I haven't learned how to fly an airplane yet.
Oh, okay.
That's on my bucket list.
Well, maybe your next protagonist can be a female pilot, and then you'll have to go learn as research, right?
Well, I would have to learn how to do some stuff, wouldn't I? But, you know, I can't just decide that the next one will be a pilot.
Right. That will just come to you?
Yeah, too organic.
Right. So you'll be just sitting there having dinner one night or taking a shower, and it will just come to you?
That has actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, Mr. Perfect, I was cooking supper, and these four women started having a conversation in my head, and I was laughing out loud. The wonder is I haven't been arrested or something.
Well,
and it was that conversation was the beginning of the book. Everyone is different.
Yes, yes. Well, I'm sure you're asked this a lot. We're right at the end of our segment here, but what's the one piece of advice you'd give to fledgling writers?
Oh, do you mean other than hold out 1/3 of everything you make for taxes?
Yes. Yes.
Other than that, it's write for yourself.
Right for yourself.
I mean, you've already pegged it. It's right for yourself.
Mm. Well, I thank you for being with us today, Linda, all the way from Alabama. What's the weather like out there right now?
The weather, well, it's in the 80s, which is unusual for August. It's usually much hotter. But, you know, for the last 5 or 6 years, summers have not been hot.
Well, it's because we've been having hot summers, so there. We've had great summers here. Well, I thank you for joining us today. What's the best place for people to find out more about you? I didn't see a website, but I did see Wikipedia.
I don't do a website, but I do share a Facebook page with a friend, Linda Jones. As a matter of fact, we co-wrote a book, Frostline, that will be out the end of this month. And we share a Facebook page, and that way we don't have to post as often. We share the duties.
There you go. All right, so if they type in, I think I did find you on Facebook.
It's
just
Linda
type in
Linda Howard/Linda Jones.
Linda Howard/Linda Jones.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for being with us today. I appreciate it, Linda. It's nice talking with you.
It has been a pleasure.
And my guest, Linda Howard, her new book is called Troublemaker. Booklist has dubbed her the queen of romantic suspense. She's got over more than 40 books out there. Very, very prolific writer. And the best place to find her again is Facebook. And if you have questions or comments on today's show, you can find me at conversationslive.net. You can email me at info@conversationslive.net. You can also call our 800 number and leave comments, questions, or feedback, 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair and on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And coming up next week, we've got Colin Eggers, who I know is a listener favorite, joining us. She travels a lot to Ireland for inspiration for her books, and she'll be joining us next week along with National Geographic's Amy Vitale. So thank you for being with us today. Appreciate your time and spending this hour with us. You can find us again at conversationslive.net. Until next week, live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.